This is New Letters,
New Letters on the Air.
I'm Angela Elam, and today we'll hear a collage of voices as we share stories about our literary operations history, beginning with 2020 Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Jericho Brown.
Listening to radio shows like this one when I was in graduate school was a big deal to me. You know, I would look online and see who had given an interview that week, and I would listen to it. And so what happens is we think, oh, one day I might get to be on New Letters on the Air. So, hey, I'm having my day.
That's right.
I finally made it, baby. It's time to celebrate.
With cheers to all the years, as we listen to some contributors to our special triumvirate, comprised of New Letters on the Air, a constant on public radio since 1977, Bookmark Press, which has been publishing collections of stories and poems since 71, and New Letters Magazine, that traces its beginnings back to the 1930s, when what is now the University of Missouri, Kansas City, was founded. Here's Robert Stewart, who began as a volunteer with the magazine in the mid-70s, retiring as executive editor in March 2020.
It is unique, and it isn't a word that I use normally.
I know you usually hate the word unique. Well, I've seen you cross that out on many manuscripts.
It's because it's sloppily used most of the time. But the reason that I have felt privileged, really, to work here for a number of decades is partly the tradition that I've come into. New Letters magazine and its predecessor magazine, the University Review, go back to 1934 and published many of the major literary figures of the 20th and 21st century, including J.D. Salinger and E.E. Cummings and just about everybody you can think of. And when I took over as editor-in-chief of New Letters magazine, I felt a tremendous responsibility to continue to work on that level with the great literary figures of our time. I just was looking at the first issue of the magazine that I published as editor-in-chief back in 2003. And there's a short story in there, The Amnesty Barracks, by Daniel Woodrell, who's a very famous novelist, and up until that time had only published novels. And he told me that this was the first short story that he'd ever published in a magazine, and that was kind of a gift, and I felt that he had put his trust in me as an editor, and that was the kind of level that I hoped that the magazine was going to be working on. I always think that literary art is really the most demanding of all the art forms, because when people read literature, it requires their complete focus. One can listen to music, or one can go to a movie, or see a play, and your mind can drift a little bit, or you can meditate if you want to. But with literature, there's no halfway, and people have to really focus on the details and the language. It creates a kind of intensity in us that only language can deliver. And so we, as literary editors and publishers, need to work hard to make sure that the language of the work that we publish is worthy, that it's fresh, and that it's authentic, and that it's intense.
You have to be engaged in literature in order to really participate in it as a reader. It takes your full focus.
Yes, and literature forces you to go inside of yourself. And it's a private thing.
There is some poetry that is better read than it is heard, because it can be intricate or difficult, or if they're doing something with form on the page that you can't hear, then you've got to read it. Of course, as the producer of the public radio show New Letters on the Air, I think that you can have just as deep a moment hearing a writer read one of their poems as you can reading it from the page. I think sometimes hearing the writer or poet in their own voice interpreting their work the way they imagine it can be the most powerful moment.
The radio show, this was the brainchild of the man who was the editor of New Letters magazine at the time, David Ray. David was walking home from the campus one day, and he passed in front of KCUR, the public radio station in Kansas City, and somebody had poured some new concrete on the sidewalk, and a leaf had blown into the wet concrete and left an impression of a leaf there. And David looked up and saw the radio station, and the permanent impression of that leaf in the sidewalk. And somehow he put the, he was a poet too, and so made these leaps of imagination, and somehow he put the two together to try to establish poetry on a more permanent level in a wider culture. And that was his goal. And somehow that leaf embedded in that concrete inspired him to think about radio as a way of making more permanent in the culture poetry itself.
You know, I can't help but wonder, though, because he was married to a poet, Judy Ray, who's British, and I always assumed it was because she knew about the BBC's long history of putting poetry on the radio. So I couldn't help but think she had something to do with it, too.
She was certainly a co-founder of the series, and I was a helper along the way. But at the time, it was really set up much more as a spontaneous performance kind of show. And the interview content came in a little bit later, that mostly the show was set up for the first few years based on performance. And we even had musicians. We had a local Kansas City jazz musician. Remember Step Buddy Anderson came into the studio at KCUR, and there was an upright piano in the studio, and he just banged out some tunes while writers were in the studio reading. So it was pretty much an adventure at the time, and none of us knew a darn thing about producing a radio show, of course.
Yeah. I've listened to some of those early shows. Yes, that's a kazoo played in 1978 on New Letters on the Air by the experimental English poet Michael Horovitz, who accompanied his readings himself.
It needs a little bit of explanation, which will be clearer if you see the poem in the New Departures anthology. But you must imagine a clock face with the hands at a diagonal. So it's not quite clear what time it is, because I wrote this poem when I was thinking about time and I was kind of smoked out. I don't smoke dope anymore, but I did then. And the poem doesn't say anything moralistic about this, but it was just brooding about not knowing what time it is and the different kind of effects. So here it is, Blank O'Clock Blues. And this performance of it is dedicated to Charlie Parker and Dan Jaffe. Past 11 or 5 of 5 makes little diff if you're only half alive. Is this jazz or is it jive? I don't know, guess I gotta go skive. Someday I'll know, guess that day'll come when I'm good and dead, when I'm off the bum, when I'm really gone. Sounds like this'll be my swan song.
That's from Blank O'Clock Blues by Michael Horovitz, founder of the English periodical New Departures in 1959. He continued to edit it for 50 years, including works by American writers William Burroughs, Allen Ginsberg, and Dan Jaffe, one of the co-founders of Bookmark Press, spelled BKMK. Jaffe taught poetry here at UMKC, and Bookmark's managing editor, Ben Furnish, fills us in on when Jaffe moved the press to the university.
Officially 1983, but the press was hanging out in his office long before then. But we began in 1971. Dan Jaffe went out for drinks after a library event with Roy Fox, the head of the Johnson County Library, and Joan Yeagley, who was a program person at the Northeast Kansas Libraries. And they got to drinking, and Bookmark Press was the result. When you think about the importance of publishing operations for the literary world, think about what does a theater mean to an actor? What does a gallery mean to a visual artist? What does a movie theater mean to a film director? Those are all really important elements for artists in those mediums to reach their audiences. And in literature, we have avenues of publication and venues in which writers can appear and which audiences know that they can find work that they're going to love and respond to. Some people find poetry really hard, particularly people who are not poets themselves. But for me, the first time I went to a reading, I was in high school and I came here to UMKC and I heard a poet read, and it was like all of a sudden I got it. And I had been reading those poems on the page and they'd just been sitting there for me, and suddenly they were alive. And it was a really powerful change that wouldn't have happened maybe if I hadn't had that opportunity. Many people don't, and I think that's why poetry maybe is closed to them, and that's why programs such as this brings that possibility to a lot more people.
Yeah, I don't want to discount the amazing experience, and the importance of having the author read orally from his or her own work. I ran a major poetry series here in Kansas City for 36 years, and it was through that many times that we really got to understand what the author was doing and how to approach the work, which then translates over into other media such as books and radio.
Yeah. The series that you referenced just now, the Midwest Poet Series, has been invaluable to bringing and hearing these poets put voice to their work in a really important way. And I think, you know, just hearing them read also really helped in the interview process too, because my reading of their work sometimes would shift after I heard them read in real life on the stage. So it's bringing the best of both worlds. One of the things I love is when we have a poet who has two or three poems in the magazine, and then Bookmark Press publishes an entire collection of their work. And then I get to interview the person. I love that when all three elements of what we do here, the magazine, the press, and the radio show / podcast, all happen when we're working together that way. And what better example than this love poem to Kansas City from our 2002 New Letters on the Air show with Dan Jaffe, reading from his book, Playing the Word, published by Bookmark Press and edited by Robert Stewart. Here's Turning the Town.
Pendergast's just a wide open memory. Harry, a haberdasher turned myth. But Basie's tunes keep right on turning the town. From 18th and Vine to the Bottoms. Yeah, they say, cruising the plaza, searching for jazz down by the river. Yeah, they say. This is still Bird's town, still Jimmy Rushing's town. It ain't a pub crawl, it's a demonstration. In Kansas City, you can mesh flesh with Claude Fiddler Williams, with Jay McShann. Hell, all these years, they've been paying your dues with their tunes. A big wind scats through Kansas City. You never know who's jazzing it up. Down on Central, smelling distance from the river, an old Buick pulls up in front of the Phoenix. Speedy Huggins is on the bandstand with Rusty Tucker. Speedy in a purple sports shirt from a jazz cruise out of Miami when he was just a kid of 75. The snow ain't here yet, but Speedy's cool. He makes much of the blues of Kansas City. He stretches time out, stretches it over the years. Slow, it seems. So slow sometimes. But no matter, somehow, always swinging. It's the beat keeps them going. The blues beat, that Kansas City beat. The blues in the bop beat keeps them shaking their heads, bobbing to the beat, never missing a word but clapping for the alto, lowering shrill voices for the bass. Through the plate glass, Speedy sees the Buick pull up, Ricky Anderson's bass poking out the back window. We're all waiting for Lonnie McFadden or Rod Fleeman for what's-his-name who blew us away last week. The town keeps changing, but it's always Basie's town, always Bird's town, and that new cat, his fur hardly singed. Man, he can blow. He stood up there, and they all took off their socks at once, 'cause this town belongs to the players.
Dan Jaffe, reading from his poetry book, Playing the Word. Sadly, both co-founders of Bookmark Press, Dan Jaffe and Joan Yeagley, died in February 2020, a day apart, both writing poetry until the end. In 2016, Dan Jaffe helped co-edit a special jazz issue of New Letters magazine with editor Robert Stewart, just one of numerous examples of collaborative efforts.
The most striking one for me is with the poet and fiction writer Mariko Nagai, who was first published in New Letters with her poem. Mariko Nagai's poem, The History of Bodies, actually was an interesting experience for me because when it came in manuscript, I did not understand the poem. And I read it over and over and over again because I knew that there was some kind of energy, some kind of brilliance going on in that poem that I was really not quite ready for. This had been after I'd been in the editing world for a while, and I decided to just trust my gut. this is a brilliant poem, even though I only understand part of it. Well, I published that poem in New Letters, and it wound up winning not only a Pushcart Prize, but was selected for the best 30 years of the Pushcart Prizes. And then eventually, of course, Bookmark Press wound up publishing Mariko's collection of short stories. And she came to Kansas City. She was on New Letters on the Air. So it was really a gratifying experience working with her.
Histories of Bodies is too long to include here, but this reading by Mariko Nagai is revealing. You could almost hear the origami folding.
Cranes. Morning can be folded. Connect one corner with another, the northern corner with a southern one, east room to the west wing, a body here, a beak there, the flat surface rising as only a paper forced into a shape can, conquering the space in between. Look around. Here, wider is bigger than the walls. Desire to live spread on their beds like washed linen, crisp and relentless. It dominates the dying. It cannot be consoled. The sunlight rations out onto the walls. No color is retrievable or relevant. After this room, the cranes hang by the window, rosary of 1,000 wishes, white cotton thread connecting one bird to another, a brotherhood of similarity. My mother sits in the chair, bringing her body closer to the folding paper, closer to see better the fragile folds, closing the distance between the mourner and the dying. She says that for every ailing body, 1,000 paper cranes must be folded. See how their wings are ever more fragile, a butterfly. My mother's finger is thick and wrinkled, like moles. She folds the paper cranes, each movement lumbering through the sign language of past, each movement waiting for the next, and there is no end. My mother pins 1,000 cranes together so they will not fly away, their extended limbs tweaked into place, submit.
Cranes by Mariko Nagai, originally published in New Letters magazine. That's from a 2011 New Letters on the Air interview, which also featured readings from her 2010 book of stories, Georgic, published by Bookmark Press. Again, here's Robert Stewart.
I want to add one other thing, though, about this conjunction of the magazine and the radio show and the press, but particularly the radio show, because I've done interviews myself as kind of a connected producer for this radio show. And it has just been one of the great honors of my life to be able to sit down for 2 or 3 hours in the home of Mark Strand, former Pulitzer Prize winner and poet laureate, and talk. Or to sit in a room with Allen Ginsberg and Robert Creeley. This radio show has afforded me some opportunities to meet these people and to talk to them intimately. Even as editor of the magazine, it would have been rare to sit down on the back porch with Richard Wilbur on his farm for an entire afternoon and talk about poetry and talk about life.
Here's a poem in honor of my garden, which despite a difficult spring has come up with a few remarkable crops. Well, this poem is called Seed Leaves, and it was dedicated to Robert Frost, and as anyone who knows Frost's poems will be able to tell, it's somewhat infected by him. Here something stubborn comes, dislodging the earth crumbs and making crusty rubble. It comes up bending double and looks like a green staple. It could be seedling maple or artichoke or bean. That remains to be seen. Forced to make choice of ends, the stalk in time unbends, shakes off the seed case, heaves aloft, and spreads 2 leaves which still display no sure and special signature. Toothless and fat, they keep the oval form of sleep. This plant would like to grow and yet be embryo, increase and yet escape the doom of taking shape, be vaguely vast and climb to the tip end of time with all of space to fill, like boundless Yggdrasil that has the stars for for fruit. But something at the root, more urgent than that urge, bids two true leaves emerge. And now the plant, resigned to being self-defined before it can commerce with the great universe, takes aim at all the sky and starts to ramify.
Seed Leaves by U.S. Poet Laureate and two-time Pulitzer Prize winner Richard Wilbur, who died in 2017 at age 96. This is a favorite recording of Robert Stewart's at the poet's Massachusetts home in 1990. Next, Bookmark Press's Ben Furnish.
I don't know if it's my favorite or not, because it's like choosing among your children.
It is. It's very hard.
But I remember, about 9 years ago, Lorraine Lopez saved my life, I think, because I had a near-death cardiac event, and I was in the ambulance, and I was thinking, I'm not ready to check out yet because I need to go hear Lorraine Lopez read next week in Washington, D.C. at the Folger Shakespeare Library. She's reading at the Penn Faulkner Award for Fiction ceremony, and I got to hear her read, prevailed upon my doctors, and she read with such notables as Barbara Kingsolver and Colson Whitehead and Sherman Alexie, who won that year, and Laurie Moore. And the audience loved her reading, and that was a real thrill. And it was exciting for me also because her book, Homicide Survivor's Picnic, which was finalist.
And published by Bookmark Press.
Was published by Bookmark Press, and it was right up there with such legendary publishing names as Knopf, Doubleday, Harper, and Grove. And I've been thinking about her lately, too, because our newest title by Lorraine Lopez is a hilarious book of stories called Postcards from the Jaren State.
Yeah. You know, I got to go interview Alice Walker out in California at her home, and I flew into the airport and picked up my rental car, and it was purple. I couldn't believe it. Solid purple. And so I drove up to her house, and she came out to meet me. And the first thing she said to me, "A purple car, really?" Because, of course, she's the author of The Color Purple. And it was just a classic moment. And I've got so many of those. One of my favorite memories actually involves Bob nearly killing our poet laureate in his old truck that he went to pick him up. Wasn't that Billy Collins
when you picked up? That was Billy Collins. And, I was trying not to let on that the brakes were going out on this Bronco. And we were driving back from the airport, and Billy and I are talking away, and the whole front end is shaking every time I tried to come to a stop. And I'm pretending like all is well. So I dropped him off at his hotel and said, "I'll be back to pick you up in a little while for dinner." And I went immediately to my mechanic. And the mechanic gave me a lift to the rental car agency where I got a new car. It wasn't purple, unfortunately. And I showed up to pick up Billy for dinner. And he looked at that car and he said, I am glad to see this car. I thought we were going to die out there.
We'll listen to an excerpt from the resulting 2003 New Letters on the Air. Here's a sample of Billy Collins' work, which also includes some astute observations about students of the art form in his poem, Introduction to Poetry.
I asked them to take a poem and hold it up to the light like a color slide, or press an ear against its hive. I say, drop a mouse into a poem and watch him probe his way out, or walk inside the poem's room and feel the walls for a light switch. I want them to water ski across the surface of a poem, waving at the author's name on the shore. But all they want to do is tie the poem to a chair with rope and torture a confession out of it. They begin beating it with a hose to find out what it really means.
Introduction to Poetry by Billy Collins, from one of my favorite New Letters on the Air interviews by Robert Stewart. You can stream it and all of the shows mentioned today on our website, newletters.org. Our unique trio of the magazine, press, and radio show has been ranked the number one literary operation in the state by the Missouri Arts Council for several years. But as we all know, 2020 is particularly challenging. It will take leaders with vision to see us through. Bookmark Press Managing Editor Ben Furnish reminds us of the value of the arts.
One thing that I have hopes for is that we strengthen the understanding that what we do is integral to the university's mission. It is fundamentally educational. I'm hoping, too, that we strengthen our direct involvement with training students as part of our work. We offer a tremendous opportunity for students to be able to learn about the work that we do, and it can prepare them in many different fields of endeavor. We're a definite place where training and knowledge in liberal arts meets the practical real world. We can, I think, give lie to the notion that the liberal arts are irrelevant to meaningful participation in the workforce. That's absolutely not true. We're in a good position to prove that wrong.
Unfortunately, we may not have the chance. UMKC's College of Arts and Sciences announced this week that our literary trio will start to be dismantled in July, since it can only support the magazine. If hearing us every week is important to you, please email your thoughts to telltheprovost@umkc.edu. Let's end on a positive note as retired editor Robert Stewart talks about passing the baton to fiction writer Christy Hodgen.
She will be the first woman in 86 years, editor-in-chief at New Letters magazine, although there have been some important women associate editors at the magazine, including Judy Ray and others, but Christy will be the first woman editor-in-chief. And she's a brilliant writer. She's well connected to the literary world.
And it'll be interesting because we're going back to an editor who's fiction writing. You're mostly poetry. You've written lots of essays, but poetry is what you love. And before you was Jim McKinley, who is really more of a fiction writer. And before that was David Ray, who is poetry. So it's kind of nice we're going back and forth.
And she's excited and working on plans, especially with the digital end of the magazine. So I think she'll be fabulous.
Here's Christy Hodgen in a 2011 show reading from her third book, Elegies for the Brokenhearted, a novel.
One night I went through the notebook you'd been working on the summer I lived at the Bavarian, and I came across the passage you had played over and over again, the one I had woken to in the middle of the night, the notes rising and falling. Rising and falling, which had sounded to me like a leaf tossed in the wind. And suddenly the question I'd been turning around in my mind, whether two people could ever reach each other or whether we were all hopelessly alone, found a surprising answer. What convinced me that all was not lost, that there was still hope, that people in fact understood one another, if only in the smallest of ways and mostly unnoticed, was something you'd written just above those plaintive notes, a leaf tumbling to the ground.
So from the leaf imprint David Ray saw in 1977 in front of KCUR, where the radio show was born, to the leaf from the imagination of our new editor, Christy Hodgen, we've continued to promote literature's transformational qualities. To help, you can subscribe to the magazine or purchase Bookmark Press publications on our website, newletters.org. There's also a Support New Letters tab in the top right corner, but if you can't afford to give in these difficult times, share your thoughts about our value by emailing telltheprovost@umkc.edu. In the meantime, listen free to hundreds of shows in our audio archives.
This is David Ray,
Judy Ray,
Rebecca Presson,
James McKinley,
and I'm Robert Stewart.
Cheers to All the Years was produced with
Jamie Walsh.
I'm Angela Elam. Thanks for listening to New Letters on the Air.